Welcome to the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Your weekend wake-up tradition for the last 30 years.
It's Rosie on the House.
And on this beautiful Arizona Saturday morning, we have a very interesting guest in the studio this morning. This is the 7 o'clock hour of Rosie on the House, where we cover interesting Arizona people, places, and things. And we've got two very interesting Arizona guests in today that specialize in training. You know, we are in the spirit of, you know, be prepared. The Boy Scout motto is being prepared. We've got first aid classes that we've taken before, but our guests bring that up to the next level of preparedness. And we've got Dan Green and Scott Garzuzzi. Did I get that right?
You did.
Garzuzzi from Rim Training. Well, a little bit about your past, Dan. You guys both have very accomplished resumes in a very short period of time. I'm guessing by the looks you're both under 40.
Yes. Yeah. So, just a little bit about myself. You know, I grew up a local here in Arizona, northern Arizona to be exact. And immediately out of high school, I graduated, and I was able to fortunate enough to go into the Army, and I went through the warrant officer program. So I was able to fly helicopters. I got to do that for a number of years. And my first introduction into kind of the medicine world was I got to fly medevac. So I got to deal with a lot of medical patients and flying them to and from the hospital and dealing with the medics in the back that taught me a lot of information. And as I kind of transitioned out of the Army into the civilian world, I got into a local police department here in the Valley, and I got on their tactical team. And through being on the tactical team, I met my good friend here, Mr. Scott Garzuzzi, and we began learning about how trauma medicine. I learned it in the military, and then I thought that it would transition into law enforcement and the fire department, and it really didn't. It was something that was kind of new. It's been around for a while, but it was new to this kind of civilian genre. And we took the information that we knew, and we started teaching local police departments, hey, this is how you save a life. This is how you keep people alive on during traumatic events, such as these active shooters we have happening all around the country.
And we'll bring it into the home as well. There's a lot of things that can happen in the home that create trauma, and what to do in that critical time before the medical team arrives to keep somebody stabilized and well till the ambulance arrives. But Scott, your background in history real quick. And real quick, Dan, you said northern Arizona. Where? We're a pretty big state here.
Williams, Arizona.
Williams.
Small little
nice
town. Yeah, gateway to the Grand Canyon.
Absolutely.
So I came from Southern California. Born and raised out there. Worked for a fire department out there and moved my way out here. Started working in a local hospital at a trauma center. Did 11 years of that. Worked on night shift, so I got to see a lot of the worst of the worst. But we also get to treat a lot of different types of injuries that come through. Got together with Dan as I transitioned into a different role in the hospital. And then, like he said, we came up with this program to teach law enforcement. Also work with military. Work with civilians, anybody else that needs training, we're always there for.
And so the service that y'all provide, there's a number of different training sessions. Talk me through a couple of them.
Really what we're into, or what we teach, our kind of bread and butter, is the trauma medicine or trauma intervention. You know, how do you do tourniquets? How do you stop the bleeding? Chest seals and hemostatic agents are like a quick clot type deal. We teach a corporate defense type classes where, you know, what do you do if you are trapped in an environment and should something chaotic occur? How do I defend myself? How does the average layman do that? CPR, basic CPR, first aid classes. We even get into site assessments. So if someone, a company or someone's like, hey, you know, how do I protect my building? How do I deter something bad from happening? We'll take a look at your facilities and give you recommendations. The other thing we've also been been interested in is kind of even a counter sniper type stuff, meaning, you know, what happens if kind of like the Mandalay Bay, you know, what happens if I'm getting shot at and I have no idea where it's coming from? How do I counter that? How do I keep myself and my family and my loved ones protected and safe?
And each one of these sessions, you've got two different aspects. You've got the tactical side, your specialty, and you've got Scott's specialty, the medical side.
Yes, yes. And that's really how we really work off each other, and even some of our instructors is the same way, where we were talking about it earlier, where a lot of times I start getting in the weeds with some of the tactical skills inside of how to convey information, and my partner Scott's like, whoa, bring it back. Let's talk this more in simplistic terms, or vice versa. Scott will start getting in the weeds with his terms, and I'm like, whoa, that is over my head. So let's make sure that our audience understands, hey, this is what's important. This is what you need to grasp out of this conversation.
Now, how long are these training sessions? Is this a one-time thing? Is this a reoccurring thing?
Our sessions vary. The most minimal time that we've noticed that we're able to convey this information is about a 2-hour time frame. If you're going from absolutely no training whatsoever, about 2 hours is the minimum. Now, we do offer classes. Our kind of bread and butters are usually around the 4-hour, because that's about the amount of time people are allotted to spend with us. Ideally, we would
any more than that, you'd think it'd be information overload. You'd start forgetting what you...
Yeah. But we do offer full 8 hours and even a couple day courses where it really turns in from a kind of a lecture to more hands-on to even scenario-based type stuff.
And you also have progressive classes as well, so you can start baby steps.
Yes, yes, baby steps. And again, time. A lot of it has to do with just time. A couple hours here, a couple hours there to build the progression of knowledge.
And you mentioned you work with a lot of military, police, but you also work with corporate, and you put together civilian classes as well.
Absolutely. And that's kind of, it's just stopping the bringing that first aid, that trauma medicine or intervention to as quick as possible. I mean, because if we think about it, when you call 911, it's probably already been a couple minutes before they even arrive on scene, before they're even doing anything. So if we can reduce that down to basically, 20, 30 seconds of, hey, this is when the incident occurred, to you actually now taking charge of the situation and buying more time for that individual, that just enhances their probability to be alive and healthy afterwards.
And what investment level am I looking at in getting engaged in these classes? I mean, is this going to, am I going to have to call out a student loan?
Oh, no. No. Well, so when we do our corporate trainings and so forth, usually generally our packages start usually around $1,200 to $1,500, and it includes 15 to 20 people, and usually that's how we get it started. As far as individual bases, we generally start with like open sessions. We usually, where a group of people, let's say a group of Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts want to learn some of our training, we usually get a designated number of people, like a minimum amount, and we have them put together some type of like a conference. And we'll put together a class for them, and we'll get it set up. So,
and y'all go through a lot of training yourselves to keep current, and new medical discoveries, new sciences, new techniques. All these discoveries. It's not like we're based on what I learned 20 years ago at my time in the military.
Right, and I'll let Scott pick up on that one.
As far as the medical goes, it's a ever evolving area. So we're always looking at different areas, different things, new equipment that comes out, and we're looking at all the research that always comes out. So we're looking at any data that's collected through any, bad situations. And if we can analyze that a little bit and incorporate certain techniques or certain equipment into it and say this is what is now proven to be better, that's what we're always going with. So it makes it kind of easy on our end because there's always research in the medical field.
And as we go through this hour, by the end of it, we'll have you guys ready to how to build your own first aid kit for your home. Everybody should have one. How far you live from your 911 services will factor into what happens there, your house, what kind of injuries are likely, ladder falls still the number one cause of homeowners being sent to emergency rooms. But, a lot of things can happen on a fall. We've got impalements, lacerations that on the way down where we land. So we'll just walk through a couple of those common things that y'all have seen and trained for. But everything you're teaching here is covered under the Good Samaritan law. Take a minute to walk me through what parameters I'm allowed to operate in under the Good Samaritan law.
So the Good Samaritan law is a basic coverage for any bystander that witnesses something or decides to intervene and help. It basically states you can practice up until your level of training, and you will be covered from any lawsuits. But you also agree not to take any gifts or donations from that person if you worked on them. And it's just a basic coverage for anybody. So if I walked up to somebody that had a cut on their arm and I put a tourniquet on, they're not going to turn around and sue me because I've been trained on how to do it. It varies on your licensure and your training. So a doctor can do a lot more on scene versus me because I don't have an MD behind my name.
And what do you have behind your name? Is all this training, am I getting a certificate? Am I getting a plaque? Do I have a little card that I put in? Or is it something on my next to my donor, organ donor on my driver's license? Is there another mark that gets added?
So it varies on the level of training that we put you through. Your basics, when we hit your CPR, you can carry your BLS card. And then we can also get you through the RIM training standards, which is covered under our advisory board. We have a board that advises us on certain things that we should be teaching and can't be teaching. They also review all of our stuff as well. So we're backed up by an MD, a paramedic, and another tactical officer as well.
Excellent. And that's a certificate I get when I go through all this training?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, does it have an expiration date, like your concealed weapons permit? You know, that's got a 5-year shelf life, and then you've got to go back to your reoccurrent. Does this have a shelf life?
It's about every 2 years, same as your BLS card, because in that 2 years, you can get a lot of information that changes over time. So we either need to correct something that we taught you in the beginning and then they've improved on it, or now we work our way towards something different now.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back after this quick break and talk about the things and injuries that can occur around the home. We're going into a lot of holiday decorating season, and there's usually somebody gets wet or electrocuted stringing lights somehow, somewhere along the way. I've been there. Accidents, ladder falls. We're going to be on ladders a lot, hanging Christmas lights and moving around the home. And just people. You know, the more people you add into the equation, the more likely something's going to happen. We're going to have a lot of guests over. We're going to be in environments where there's going to be a lot of guests. So what to do in that situation where the worst happens, and because, hey, you got to be prepared.